You have a gift. It is the gift of gab. And with it, you could rule the world.
Now, if you're alone in the middle of the night with a storm going on, you hear this voice, she was a little bit like, what is that?
Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together. And we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, sometimes a person passes through your life and changes it for good. Sometimes such a person is a part of your life for a long time, like a mom or a dad or a grandma or grandpa or a brother or sister. But other times, the person who makes a big change for you might only be part of your life for a season. Someone you knew at camp, or someone you worked with for a while, or someone in the supermarket that you overheard say something life-changing. Or maybe a teacher. Ohio storyteller Kim Whitecamp is ready to share a story with us in this episode about just such a person in her life. Here's Kim with a story about Mrs. Ort, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
Well, when I was a little girl, my report cards came in butterscotch-colored envelopes. The report cards themselves were Easter egg green and blue and yellow. I loved to get my report card. Not for the grades. Kids know what their grades are before they ever see the report card. That part's for the parent. I like to get mine because of the comments. Now, when I was in elementary school, our report cards were not computer-generated, with numbers denoting which comment you should look at, like number 13, 14, and 22, that's your kid. How can you have 35 comments for 400 beautiful, unique children? No, back in the day, before that technology, our report cards had handwritten comments by the teachers, and I loved it. From kindergarten through fourth grade, all of my report cards had the same theme. If Kimmy wouldn't talk so much. Mrs. Wyrick, my third grade teacher, gave me my first review, and I did not like it. She said, if Kimmy would entertain her work as much as she tries to entertain the class. I thought I was doing a good job. Apparently, she did not. If Kimmy would apply herself. If Kimmy would stay seated. Your daughter interrupts. Your daughter's always bouncing off the walls. They didn't say that, but I've heard that in teacher conferences when I sat in the hallway. And it was that way. And it was hard. I would get off the bus on report card day, and I would go in the house, and I'd get at the end of the line of children because I wanted to be the last one to see my mom. All of my siblings were somewhat overachievers but me. I overachieved in other areas. And whenever it was my turn to show my mom the report card, she would begin to shake her head and cluck her tongue, and she'd go, oh, Kimmy, just hand it here. I'd hand it to her, and she'd open it up and look at the grades. She'd read the back. And every report card, every semester, she'd write the same thing. We've tried everything. It was that way until fifth grade, when I found Mrs. Ort, or rather, she found me. Mrs. Ort was a ramrod straight woman, sensible skirt, rubber-soled bottom shoes, button-down shirt starched with lines down the sleeves, a sharp edge with the iron. Her hair piled high, shellacked with Aquanet. Her lips painted coral number 62, set firm in determination to set us adrift on the sea of life, she the wind in our sails. Well, I was so excited to get her because all of my brothers that went before me, I was the first girl to get her, said that she was the coolest teacher ever. And I was so stoked. I remember the day that they announced who got what teacher. And my mom put us all in the Oldsmobile station wagon. We drove up to the Locust Grove Elementary School. All the doors were open, airing out fresh paint. And my mom dropped us off at the entrance. And we all ran down through the hallway on that freshly polished linoleum floor to the bathrooms. Because right beside the bathrooms is where they posted all the pages. And I went and I found fifth grade, and then I found the teachers, and I started looking for my name, and there it was. I got Mrs. Ort as my teacher. I was so stoked to see what made her cool, because she did not appear cool in the hallway. Well, school started. And the very first day, she took roll call and then shut the door and then went over and lifted the top off of a glass terrarium and pulled out a rabbit. And she said, I'm going to let the rabbit run around during class. If you keep your pockets on your seat and the rabbit goes by, you can pet it, but you don't let your pockets leave your seat. So the whole class, this rabbit's hopping around. And you'd be thinking, just come to me. Just come to me. And if you got to pet it, you just were so excited. And then in the middle of class, out of nowhere, she'd go, children, look, look at the rabbit. Eat a pellet, make a pellet. Eat a pellet, make a pellet. That's how it's done. That's what I thought. I was like, wow, eat a pellet, make some poop. It's fascinating. She was teaching us science right there in the room. And I thought, she is the coolest teacher ever. I loved her because I can never remember that woman raising her voice ever. And yet we listened. Other teachers would leave the room and say, work on your work. I'll be back in a minute. And bedlam would ensue. Nobody worked on anything. But when Mrs. Ort left the room, we were quiet, diligent, working hard to get done as much as possible. So when she'd come back, we could show her what we did because we wanted her to be proud of us. And if one of us acted up, she would gently call us to the front and she'd go, come here, sugar. And then she would look out towards the classroom and sit in a chair and put you in front of her so that they could not see your peers, your quivering lip, and the tear going down your face as she explained to you why you were getting in trouble. And she did it in a very calm voice, and you either were sent back to your seat or sent to the office. No one wanted to upset her. Unlike Mrs. Seiler, who ran the library and could not stand me. The library is a place of quiet. Kimmy is never quiet was one of the things on the back of my report cards. I would walk through the library doors so excited. I'm a prolific reader to this day. And I'd walk through the library doors and I could see through the plexiglass window. I wouldn't look directly. I would use my peripheral vision because she scared me. I would see Mrs. Seiler behind her desk. And the minute I walked in, I could see her rise up out of that chair she sat on. And when she'd rise up, I could hear that chair sigh in relief as she lifted her body. She would grab a yardstick, not a ruler, and she would stand and watch me as I made my way around the library. And then I would get involved in something, and I'd get so excited I forgot that she was watching. Like one time I remember I found Charlotte's Web, and when I went to the back to see who had taken the book out, Rick Armstrong had written his name there. And I ran out to a table and I was like, Louise, Julie, you're not going to believe this. Guess who had this book probably in his bedroom? I said, Rick Armstrong had this in his house. And they're like, oh, this is so exciting. And as I was telling them this and we were getting super excited that we had a book that Rick Armstrong had in his house, thwap came that yardstick on the table. And I was banned from the library for 7 days for causing a ruckus, she said. I've forgiven her because I realize that she was just angry she couldn't retire and she had to take it out on somebody. But whenever you got hauled out of the library by Mrs. Seiler, kids would kind of give you a silent, yeah, stick it to the man, right? But not in Mrs. Ort's class. In Mrs. Ort's class, if you got in trouble, they'd look at you with a look like, what are you doing? We love this one. Well, I was in her class about 3.5 weeks when she stopped teaching. And I think I was talking to Melissa Cunningham to my right about her new Wonder Woman lunchbox, because that's exciting, right? And she said, Kimberly, stand up. Every head turned and looked at me. I slid out of my little wooden desk, played with the bottom of my Snoopy t-shirt and thought, what did I do that she found out about? She said, you, child, you have a gift. It is the gift of gab, and with it, you could rule the world. And I thought to myself, finally, somebody gets it. I was so excited. I had received pink slips my whole kindergarten through fourth grade for talking too much, disrupting, go to the office, and here's a teacher telling me that it's a gift. Well, when the report cards came out in that class, I was so excited. When she called my name, I ran up and I received it from her with reverence. I ran back to my desk, took it out. I did not look at the grades. I flipped it over immediately, and there on the back she had written, Kimberly is a pure delight. What? I was so excited, I stuck it in my backpack. I was off the bus before it even slowed to a complete stop. I ran in the house and I said, Mom, look at my report card. And she said, Kimmy, let's wait. Let me look at Chris's first. He's a psychologist now. She said, let me look at Chris's first. I'm like, no, Mom, really, you really want to see my report card. I promise you do. Just look at it. She took it, slid it out. She looked at the grades. Looked at the back. Gave me a side glance. Flipped it over and checked the name on the front. Then she walked over to the kitchen bar and then she wrote something, slipped it back into that butterscotch colored envelope, gave it to me and said, you put this in your backpack. You do not read what I wrote. You hand it to her tomorrow morning and tell her I'm calling her at lunch. Yes, ma'am. Well, the next day I got on the bus and I found an empty green and vinyl seat. I slid to the window, turned, unzipped my backpack, and you know what I did. Secretly, you want me to do it. I pulled it out, slipped out the report card, turned it over, and there on the back, my mother had written, "What are you drinking?" Well, my mom and Mrs. Ort did talk that day at lunch. And my mom, even to this day, tells me about the conversations they had. Mrs. Ort said things like, Kimmy has gifts that cannot be tested within these four walls because they expand far beyond that. If we don't find a place for her to go while she's in school conforming to what she has to learn, we're going to lose her. And from that day on, they worked hard to find things for me to do. For instance, not only theater, they got me into theater, not only playing the tonette, which did give me an outlet, but clapping every eraser she could possibly give me to get me out of her classroom. Well, I stayed in touch with Mrs. Ort. I had a morning radio show. I had her on every Teacher Appreciation Day. When I went back home to see my mom, I popped by Mrs. Ort's house. And then she passed away. And I remember at the funeral, her son said to me, I have something for you. I said, okay, and he took me into the bedroom where all the coats were piled high, and he reached beside the bed and put a cardboard box up on the bed, and on the side was my name, my maiden name when I was in her class, and he took off the lid and he said, my mom saved this, and I said, what? And I went over and looked inside, and there were all the love letters I wrote her about how she was the greatest teacher in the world, and that I just loved her so much, and there were brooches with rusty back pins, half the rhinestones missing that I bequeathed to her. There was an essay I wrote about what I wanted to be when I grew up, and she had framed it and kept it on her house wall for a while. And I'd written that I wanted to be Billy Graham. My mom's still disappointed. And I looked at her son and I said, you know what? I am her favorite. I thought I was. I really did. I thought I was her favorite student, and now I know. And he said, yeah, you're her favorite. Come with me. And he took me in the basement and flicked on a light. And there against that cinder block wall were stacks and stacks and stacks of cardboard boxes. Some names I recognized from school, some I didn't. And he said, every one of them was her favorite. All of you. You know, sometimes you don't understand the value of a moment until it becomes a memory. And in hindsight, those glasses gifted to us by life, not so we can beat ourselves over the head with what could have, should have, would have been, but to give us clearer understanding with a vibrancy of colors to move forward in a better, more solid direction. In hindsight, I would do things different. Fifth grade is hard. You don't know whether to run with the wind, wipe snot on your sleeve, and play and never brush your hair till those are not in the back. That was my MO. Or fifth grade, do I brush my hair, put on some Bonnie Bell lipstick, and act like I have it all together? Fifth grade is tough. That's why it's called tweenagers. And if I would have threw my arms around that woman and thanked her, it would have been socially destructive. And I would have been made fun of. But now I know the value of a moment. And in hindsight, I would do things different. I get at the end of the line of kids going out the double metal doors to recess. And as they all exited, I would go back into the classroom. And as she sat at her desk and turned to ask me, Kimberly, what is it you want? I would jump in her lap, throw my arms around her and say, thank you, thank you, thank you for teaching me that I do not have to fit in anybody's box.
That was Kim Whitecamp with Mrs. Ort. Listening to this story makes me think of something that happened to me not too long ago. A friend of mine, Todd, reached out to ask me kind of an unusual question. Now, my relationship with Todd came about like this. I first knew the person to whom he had been married. Her name was Stephanie. I knew her long before she was married to Todd. Stephanie and I had been fellow students in college together for 1 year decades ago. We sang in a jazz ensemble together with some other friends. And many years later, after she had married Todd, Todd and Stephanie became fans of my music. They'd come to shows, and Todd and I became friends through that. We didn't interact with each other very often. We hardly ever saw each other. But we all had a lot of affection for one another, born in the year I had spent as a fellow college student with Stephanie. In any case, a few years ago, Stephanie passed away, and all of us who remember her sorrowed over that. It was far too early for her to go. And sometime after she passed away came this unusual question from Todd. Todd reached out to me and asked if I might be willing to write down some thoughts about how Stephanie was in college. He wanted Stephanie's kids to know that Stephanie. And the truth is, not even Todd knew that Stephanie, so would I commit a few things to paper? Anyway, I opened a blank Word doc on my computer, and I found that I couldn't even begin to write. I wasn't ready for the flood of memories that came back about the influence on my life of this friend with whom I had been a fellow student for a single year. It swamped me. I have not to this day been sufficiently able to respond to that question, to capture on paper all that Todd was asking me to write down. And the reason I'm telling you this is not to talk much about Stephanie or Todd or what Stephanie was like in college. It's only to point to the invitation from a friend to think deeply for a moment about someone I knew for a short season, to search my brief thoughts and memories about that person, and to find myself completely overwhelmed by the magnitude of how that person influenced me. It felt like a holy thing to realize how much impact we have on one another. You know, maybe no one will invite you to sit in front of a blank page and enumerate the ways such and such a person influenced you. So I'm inviting you. Pick a person, any person, and write a bit. You might be surprised at what comes to you. And the flip side is that someone else might be able to do the same on a blank page about you. You matter in the lives of the people you interact with. I don't know how often you get to hear that. Maybe not enough. And that's where Kim's story about Mrs. Ort took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Our next story is about a girl who finds herself in challenging circumstances and whose life is changed not by a person, but by a tree. This story is brought to us from Simon Brooks, and it's called The Chinaberry Tree.
Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, far away in Japan, there was a young girl who lived with her grandmother. Nobody knew what happened to her parents. That's not told in the story. But she loved her grandmother, and her grandmother loved her, and her grandmother looked after her granddaughter. Her grandmother wove these beautiful baskets. And as the granddaughter got older, she tried to teach her granddaughter how to weave beautiful baskets as well. But the young girl wasn't as good as grandma. She wasn't a natural weaver of baskets. But she tried her best. And they would sell these baskets to make money for food and to pay for their clothes. And they lived a very humble life. Well, as the years passed and the years passed, as the grandmother got older, she wasn't able to make as many baskets. And then the baskets that she made weren't as good as they used to be. And the young girl, well, she was just plateauing and she couldn't make better baskets. So she decided to look for a different job, a better paying job. And so she looked and she searched and she found a job that wasn't in her village on the coast. It was up in the mountains. And when she had to go to do this job, she had to leave very early in the morning. And by the time she got home at the end of the day, it was getting late. But the pay was pretty good, and they looked after her, they treated her well, and they gave her the best food to eat that she had ever had. But she wouldn't eat all of it. She would only eat half of it. And she would save the other half, wrapped up, to take home to give to her grandmother, so that her grandmother could try this amazing food that neither of them had had before. Now, on a journey backwards and forwards, she began to realize that there was this China berry tree that marked the halfway point. And this China berry tree, the scent that came off of it was beautiful. It was this deep, deep, rich fragrance, kind of earthy, but with a hint of chocolate, if you will, a little bit of vanilla. And the blossoms, they were these beautiful, fragile purple blossoms that covered the tree. And sometimes if she was coming home late, she would stop at this tree and she would rest her head against the tree. And she would put her hands against the tree and just rest for a while before continuing on her way home. And sometimes when she was going to work, she would say hello to the tree, just because she started to enjoy the tree and it became a companion, if you will. Well, one day she was making her way home and this storm came out of the mountains, followed her down and caught up with her just as she got to the tree, and the rains pushed down so hard she got wet in an instant and she hid underneath the tree. She wanted to wait until the rain stopped. But you know how you've seen those lines of clouds that come across and you can see a line in the road or on the path where the rain has been and it hasn't gone any further, it's just stopped there. Well, this was one of those types of rainfalls. And the moon was off in the distance, and the moon was shining its light under the tree when she heard a voice. In 3 days, I shall die. Now, if you're alone in the middle of the night with a storm going on, you hear this voice. She was a little bit like, what is that? And she looked around in the moonlight. And then she heard this voice speak again, and the voice said, in 3 days, I shall be cut down and turned into a ship. And then she was like, I'm tired. I'm really tired. I'm hallucinating. I'm hearing voices. This is crazy. And then she heard the voice a third time. And the voice said, I will not let the Lord launch the ship that I am in until you put your hands against the hull, your head upon the keel, and sing this song. And she heard this song. And she hummed it back, and she hummed it back. And then the storm stopped. And she thought, well, that was weird. And she made her way home, and she gave the food that she had saved for her grandmother to her grandmother, and she ate it, and she went to bed. And she thought, I must have been so tired last night to have imagined all of that. And she made her way to work again, and the tree was there, and she made her way back home, and the tree was still there. The second day, she saw the tree, and when she made her way home, she saw the tree again, and I must have imagined it. The third day, she sees the tree there. I must have been going insane. I need a break, she thought. But when she came back that evening, the tree was gone. She could see the shattered stump. She could see some of the blossoms laying down on the ground, some of the twigs and branches. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, but when you suddenly miss something that you didn't really think mattered that much to you, and find that indeed you are very, very attached to that thing. That was how this girl was. She hadn't really thought much about the tree until it was gone and her heart broke. And she threw herself down at the ground and put her arms around the trunk and she wept. And she picked some of the blossoms up and she put them in her pocket. But she thought nothing more of it. Until a few weeks later, when people in the next village were coming into her village and they were talking, there's a ship that's being built by the local lord. They've built it and it's on these rollers, but it won't launch. Some of the farmers, they took their oxen and their horses to the next village down to try and pull this ship into the ocean. But word came back that we need more horses, we need more oxen. And the girl thought, maybe I can launch the ship. And so she made her way to the next village along. And there was the ship on its great rollers. There were all these huge warriors, these big old samurai, laying down exhausted. There were oxen and horses that were fallen down, sweating and foaming at the mouth. They too were exhausted. They weren't able to push the ship. And the young lady, she saw the Lord sitting there on his fancy chair. And she went over to him with all humility, and she bowed her head, didn't look at him, and she said, "Your Lordship, may I try to launch the ship?" Well, some of the people that were standing around, they just burst out laughing. "How can this like slip of a girl launch this ship when we've got these oxen and horses?" And the Lord said, "The oxen and the horses couldn't launch the ship, so why not give her a try?" And they were like, "Oh, okay." And so she walked up to the ship. She rested her head against the keel, and she put her hands upon the hull, and she began to hum the song that the spirit of the tree, as she now knew it was. And she hummed it, and she sang the words. And then she felt herself falling forward, and she opened her eyes and saw the ship rolling down the rollers and into the water. Now the Lord had offered anyone who could launch that ship anything that they wanted. And so, of course, being a good person, he said, "What would you like?" And she said, "Well, Your Lordship, I have to travel a great distance to work to keep looking after my grandmother. And as she's getting older, I worry about her being on her own. If I could have a small stipend to allow me to stay at home and provide for the two of us until she dies, that is all I need." And he looked at her. She could have asked for untold riches. She could have asked for gems and jewels. She could have asked for the finest of clothes, but all she asked was for a humble, simple stipend so that she could look after herself and her grandmother. Well, of course the Lord gave her that. But he also, later, sent bolts of silk and a seamstress to show this young girl how to make clothes. And the girl found out that this was her talent, not basket weaving. And so she was able to look after herself and her grandmother for the rest of her days. The end.
That was Simon Brooks with The Chinaberry Tree. Was there a teacher or someone in your life that helped change your perspective on yourself? Did you ever have to do something that you thought you couldn't do? What were some of the greatest gifts of understanding you've received from someone? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. We want to thank Kim Whitecamp and Simon Brooks for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. Ready for more stories? Don't miss Constant Wonder, the BYU Radio podcast full of stories about the beautiful world we live in, wherever you get your podcasts.